Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests today are here to talk about Wildlife Wednesday. Welcome Irene Morris and Kaya Clotter.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for being here. This month's presentation, let me take a step back there. Irene, you represent the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. Would you please give us a quick overview of what you do and what's Wildlife Wednesdays?
Sure. We're a nonprofit, totally funded by volunteers organization, and basically we're wildlife advocates. We're the only Alaskan organization that represents Alaskan wildlife. So if you enjoy Alaskan wildlife, we're the ones that keep an eye out for them. So we do educational programs like the Wildlife Wednesdays in the wintertime. We also try to do other education. We follow bills that might be in legislative office and also any kind of criminal offenses against Alaska wildlife. So basically, we're the advocates of the Alaska wildlife, and we're welcoming you to our very last Wildlife Wednesday tonight for the season.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being here. Irene, we're having a little bit of trouble with your microphone. I was going to ask if you could slide over to the next one. And in the meantime, we will turn it over to Kaya here. Kaya Clotter, you're the speaker for this month's presentation. It is focused on carnivores. And the title of the presentation is kind of fun, Carnivore Ecology in the Subarctic with Friends Like These, ... What's the meaning behind that cliffhanger title?
Well, it references the fact that looking at the interactions between carnivores is very complex because there are ways in which they sort of compete with each other and kind of have negative interactions, but there's also ways where they can sort of help each other out and facilitate one another. But it's never without strings or without risk. And so I just use that title to kind of reference the fact that even though these animals are sharing the same landscape, have the same goals in a lot of cases in terms of, you know, the kinds of things they're looking for to survive, in some cases they aren't the best of neighbors.
Or friends.
Exactly.
So how long have you been studying carnivores?
Well, I guess it depends how you measure. I graduated from my undergrad in 2007, and that was kind of the point where I was pretty committed to this kind of work being what I wanted to do. Since then, I worked a number of field jobs around the country and then started grad school a few years ago, which I just finished this past spring. So I think at that point it's safe to say pretty official. I've got a master's degree. I'm studying them.
It's official. And how do you study carnivores? Are you out in the field ever, tracking, observing?
As much as I can be, for sure. That's my favorite part of it. There's many methodologies that people use to study carnivores. They're one of the hardest species to just, or groups of species to just go out and look at. They don't generally stand around to be observed. So common methodologies include putting collars on animals. So where I work in Denali, that's done a couple times a year. With helicopter darting, and we deploy cutting-edge GPS collars that give us locations every 4 to 6 hours. That gives us a ton of info about what they're doing. But there's other stuff going on. As part of my master's, I was doing snow tracking surveys. I was collecting scat, which can give you a wealth of information about an animal's diet, as well as a window into genetics. So you can see how big the population is, how many individuals, who's related to who, all that kind of thing. So we really try to deploy a variety of methods to get the information we need.
Out in the field, have there ever been any close calls?
With carnivores or with other things?
With anything. mainly with carnivores.
With carnivores, no, I wouldn't say so. They're kind of the least of my worries, honestly. When I'm in the field, I'm more concerned about bad roads and bad weather and that sort of thing.
Yes, you're wise to be concerned about those things as well. So tell us a bit about some of the species of carnivores that live here in Alaska.
Well, sure, I'll tell you. So the ones that I focused my graduate work on, the ones I'm most familiar with, were wolves, wolverines, coyotes, and red foxes. That constitutes, I guess, the majority of carnivores in Denali, which is where I worked. Of course, Denali also has grizzly bears and black bears, as well as lynx and marten. So quite the assemblage. Alaska really has it's a great place to study carnivores because we do have so many and so much space in which we can, see their interactions and their kind of both their individual interactions, if we're lucky, and certainly their ecological interactions on the landscape.
And so your talk tonight will focus on the four that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Coyotes, wolves, martens, and foxes?
Wolverines and foxes.
Why those four?
To be perfectly honest, because those were the ones that showed up in my data. I don't have anything against the others, but they just didn't really present themselves for study, so they don't get included.
So what are some things that you're going to focus on when you give this presentation? Do you do this a lot, give presentations on the carnivores?
With some regularity. So this presentation has kind of two main sections, which it echoes my graduate work, the two chapters of my thesis. The first is looking at the dynamics associated with scavenging in the wintertime environment. And, you know, what is this resource? Who's eating it? When? How long do they stay? How are they competing with one another, et cetera? And then the second part focuses more specifically on just wolves and coyotes and uses data from GPS-collared wolves and GPS-collared coyotes, you know, in the same area to try to understand how are these coyotes making decisions about where to be on the landscape, how to use the environment, given that there's these wolves around that can pose a really significant threat to them. So a big umbrella picture is basically looking at interactions between the multiple carnivore species and then kind of two different methodological approaches there.
In your years of studying these creatures, what's something that you've seen that surprised you the most?
Oh, boy. Well, they kind of never stop surprising you, really. I had one wolf biologist tell me after a very long career that the only thing he knew for certain at that point is that they're going to keep surprising you.
Interesting.
Yeah. I certainly will say it didn't surprise me, you know, your sort of mind might know something that's true, but just to see it can still really catch you off guard. Just the tenacity of these animals to survive under extremely adverse conditions is very impressive.
There's a really interesting photo on the flyer for this event. It features a woman, you, holding up the remains of a moose and kind of its skull and spinal column. Tell us what's going on in that picture.
Yeah, so that was part of the remains of a wolf kill that in order to understand the scavenging behavior, we deployed motion-sensitive cameras at carcass sites, both wolf kill and otherwise, to be able to get a long-term view of kind of who was coming and when, since it's not feasible to actually stay there yourself and watch. So to do that, we'd, you know, have to go out and find these sites and put up a camera, and that was a pretty fresh wolf kill that we were luckily able to get to quickly, which is, you know, that covers kind of the most interesting time when the kill is fresh and that's a real incentive for animals to be there. And that was basically all that was left. There was that piece that I was holding and then a big piece of hide with the lower leg bones and feet kind of still attached to it. They cleaned it up pretty well.
Yeah. It's kind of a mess in the snow, though. There's like pink snow all around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the diagnostic things that we look for when we come across a carcass. You know, I have to determine, okay, was this killed by a predator or did it just die of, you know, starvation or something like that? And the amount of blood in the snow is a big determining factor on that for sure.
Do you think they were planning to return to that site to get the rest?
Well, typically what wolves do is they'll make a kill. They'll stay at it for, depending on the size of the pack, generally a day or two is what it takes them to kind of really eat the best of it, the organs, the major muscle masses. And then they'll go on and, you know, hope for better luck elsewhere to make a new kill. But eventually, you know, if they're swinging through or they get hungry again, they'll come back and check it out and maybe chew on the scraps. So at the time we were at that particular kill, the wolves had already abandoned it for that sort of initial time. But my cameras did show them coming back later.
I don't know if I would have had the guts to be at that site, to be perfectly honest. How do you know when they're gone for good?
Well, in that case, we had the advantage of the GPS collar data, which showed us that they had, you know, left that area. But actually, in the course of other jobs, I've gone into carcass sites that the wolves were still at. I didn't see them. Wolves are very, you know, shy and elusive. But when we approached, we heard them howling nearby. It happened a couple times, which is kind of their way of being like, hey, what the heck? Like, we were eating that, you know. Why are you here? But that's really, it's never been a concern to me. And part of that is an intellectual knowledge of how rare it is for wolves with an abundant natural food supply to bother people. And then that was reinforced by these experiences I've had of, honestly, of trying to get close to wolves for scientific purposes, mostly to count them or to do something like this going to carcass site. And gosh, it's darn near impossible. You just can't, you know, you've got like radio telemetry on them. You know they're right over there. You sneak in as sneaky as you possibly can, and whew, they're gone.
Wow.
So, you know, having that happen over and over just really reinforced to me that they don't want anything to do with me.
Well, I guess understanding that behavior is a great way to help you feel a little bit safer, just knowing a little bit about what they're going to do if you do something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Kaya, great. Thank you so much for that great information. The talk is tonight, Egan Lecture Hall, University of Alaska, 7 to 8 p.m. It's free and there will be snacks. And Irene, back to you. What else is going on with Alaska Wildlife Alliance that you'd like to talk about?
Okay, since this is the last program, I don't know when we'll be back on the radio. We will have cookies, as usual. We are looking for more volunteers. This is a volunteer organization. I'd like to emphasize the fact that if you really enjoy our wildlife, with most of the people that come to the programs do, you'd really be helping them, you know, help us help them through their habitat, through conservation. And we're especially looking for new board members if you'd like to go an extra step. It's wonderful work. It's very rewarding. In April, we'll be attending the trial for the man who set out wolf traps after season and caused the death of a cub and a mother black bear. So we'll be following that. We'll be looking at legislative bills, any of them that affect Alaska wildlife. We try to attend and offer comments if possible. We work with the organizations like the Alaska Wildlife Troopers and support them in the wildlife enforcement. So there's a lot of real good work, and we need volunteers and especially board members. Maybe people who are retiring this year and you're going to have extra time to go out and look at wildlife, can put in a few hours and help us. So please come tonight. If you're interested in becoming a volunteer and a board member, please let us know and enjoy the summer full of wildlife.
Thanks, Irene. Again, the talk's tonight, Egan Lecture Hall, University of Alaska Southeast. Kaya Clatter is the presenter, Carnivore Ecology. And more information at akwildlife.org.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much for being here, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.